welcome everyone to the Second Court of Appeals this morning. Thank you for coming. We've got two cases that will be argued this morning. And before we begin, I want to introduce the panel to you. To my left, we have a change of panel, actually. To my left is Justice Mark Pittman. To my right is Justice Elizabeth Kerr, and I'm Chief Justice Bonnie Sutterth. It's my understanding that all the attorneys have checked in, or all the parties that will be arguing have checked in as well. And before we begin the first one, then, I'll ask the clerk to call the case.
The court will now call Charles Bates versus Lisa Allen. And may it please the court, Mr. Charles Bates, appellant, representing himself, Mr. Joseph Zellner, to argue for the appellant.
Mr. Bates, you may begin.
Good morning, Your Honors. I thank you for allowing me the time to speak. I'm not a professional lawyer. I'm here acting pro se for myself. By training, I'm an aerospace engineer. And as an engineer in the aerospace field, I'm used to dealing with yes or no, right or wrong, true or false. We don't have that much of a gray area. And it carries over to your normal everyday life after 30 years. You'll have to excuse me, I've summertime thing. So when we talk about something, we're always talking about something that's based in fact, that there is something that we go back to. And that's how I approach the divorce. If you take a look at all the items, exhibits that I came up with, it all pertained to what the divorce was. I won't take a lot of time to go through things. The brief carried quite a bit of information, as does the extra paperwork that was there. The overall effect has quite a bit of information. However, it was blocked from being used in court by Judge Tiffany Harrowing. When I went in for the divorce, I didn't expect anything special. I did expect the judge to force Lisa Allen to honor the agreement that we had between each other as far as the retirement funds. The funds that were not there. The divorce hearing in February was not the first. Sorry. We were scheduled for the hearing in January, and then it got rescheduled because, as the judge said at the time, even going to 8 or 9 o'clock, there wouldn't be enough time. With a total of 69 exhibits, if you just allowed 5 minutes for each one, which is very low, that's 5 3/4 hours. And with everything that would have been said, it would have taken much longer than that. However, the first words out of Judge Harlan's mouth was that she had somewhere to be at 6 o'clock. So she was only allowing 4.5 hours for the hearing. That should have broken down for 2 1/4 hours for each person. But as we went through with all the delays, it ended up to be just barely over an hour that my attorney had to try and present everything, which was just impossible to do. At the time of the hearing, my attorney at the end asked for an extension for additional testimony because there was so much that hadn't been covered. This covered everything from the money that was stolen, the retirement fund that was never funded, even though she said that she had already placed the money in the account. And I'd have to say that we were together for 16 years, 6 of them married, but I trusted her extremely. She always took care of all the money. And after the turn of events in the Dallas-Fort Worth area, I had to leave the area and work on a consultant basis, so it was natural for her to take care of everything. Excuse me. In October of 2015, I told Lisa Allen that I wanted to stop traveling and wanted to retire and be with her. And as strange as it sounds, I was very much in love with her. She could do no wrong. And I was tired of being away from home, coming back every other week or every third weekend, and just having a weekend wasn't enough. At the time, she seemed to agree. Yet 30 days later, she wanted a divorce, wouldn't say why. Even in court, she said she blindsided me with the request. It wasn't until time went on that I found out the reasons why, which was the fact that she had sent nude pictures of herself to somebody that she was seeing. There's no doubt in my mind that she was committing adultery. There's no way that we were going to end up staying married. What I didn't realize at the time was how badly she'd taken advantage of me. That was what we were trying to prove in court. Under Texas law and case law, an agreement between husband and wife is valid. All I wanted when we went into court is for her to be forced to pay the money that should have been there. In testimony, she recognized the retirement fund at Edward Jones without a problem, even stated what it was for. The one bit of evidence, which I believe was R3, she never said a word about it and agreed, which showed how much money should have been there. The 401 money that she talked me into deferring so that she could put that extra money away. And and also the extra monies that I'd had to take out of my private mutual funds for when we needed in between jobs. I'd like to point out that over a 6-year period, even with the breaks in unemployment, my net income for that 6 years was $500,000. I've gone back through the bank statements, and it's in all the statements to be proved. If you look at the tax paperwork, it doesn't show that much. But I managed to defer what is called per diem. And it's legal under IRS rules and governed by CONUS, which meant that I got between $53,000 and $55,000 a year in cash, no taxes, not accounted for, in addition to my salary. That was partial deferment that way. She never argued, like I said, about anything because she knew the money was there, what it was for, and the bank records would show it. That was one of the few things that we managed to get through at the court. However, as I said, we'd run out of time. I'd like to point out that for the case law that I quoted, I tried to state what the context, how it applied to me, not something that cherry-picked where only a small part of it would apply. If I used the normal thing that a lot of attorneys that I saw do, I would have had over 200 pages of case law. Most of it wouldn't apply because it wasn't for divorces. A lot of it was just normal business law. But under LexisNexis, it pointed out all the different things. And under that case law, it pointed out that the judge illegally limited the hearing, would not allow extra. After the hearing, I was very upset, very disturbed. Didn't know what to say. My attorney was quite upset. I am in a better position than a lot of people. I have people in law in my family, and I called my cousin, Bev Morrison. Lisa Allen has met my cousins at a funeral and got the chance to meet some of them. Bev Morrison is a judge, has been for 30 years in Virginia. She met David. David's a special prosecutor for the Justice Department. She met Howard and thought he was too grumpy. He's a retired federal judge. I went to Dev and asked, you know, am I wrong in this? After looking at the raw testimony and a copy of the exhibits for both sides, he told me no, that something was wrong in the court for her to have ruled the way she did. He told me that I should put in a very explicit request and also for a findings of fact to find out why she ruled the way she did. That is included in the brief, and I won't go into depth because it would take too much time. But everything is spelled out there. There was no reaction out of Judge Harling. She just denied it the same as she had denied my attorney's request or motion for additional additional time for testimony.
Sir, is your major complaint, and I know you're not an attorney, but is your major complaint against the way that Judge Harling handled the proceedings or the way the property was divided up?
100% against Judge Harling.
And that she didn't give you enough time?
She violated Texas law. She violated 42 U.S.C. 1983, 42 U.S.C. 1985.
Tell me how she
quote.
Okay. Tell me how she... other than violating your federal civil rights, can you tell me how she violated Texas law and the way she conducted the proceeding?
Again, under the civil rights and the fact that she limited the hearing to 4.5 hours, but we only got a little bit over an hour.
So would you contend that your major complaint is that Judge Harling violated your civil rights and Texas law because she didn't give you enough time to put on your case?
That is part of it.
Okay.
I found out some additional things when I was researching, trying to find out why she had done this by going back to other cases. And if it hadn't been for two clerks at Denton County with a statement they made, I probably would not have thought of it. But when I was getting frustrated, online I can see all the court cases from Denton County under Judge Harling. Everything is online. For up in Denton County, it's online for 30 days and they take it off. You either have to order it in disk information or go there and get it. And while getting frustrated, I said something about it, and the one clerk walking up, I said something to the effect that I couldn't see how a judge could make the decisions that she did when there were blatant criminal actions, you know, in a divorce. And the one clerk walking up said, oh, you're talking about Judge Harling. And it surprised me considerably. And that is what I found out. If you go back through, you'll find that she rules unfairly in almost every case. I see I have the yellow light and I haven't been able to cover much. Well, I was working away from home. I stayed in the cheapest places imaginable. I didn't go out for dinners, didn't go out to movies, cooked my own food, trying to maximize the amount of money that would be put in the retirement account. Lisa Allen knew that. Matter of fact, when all this came up, we talked about it, and I pointed out that she financially raped me by not putting any of the money away. I discovered through the bank records that she had spent everything she made and 60 to 70% of what I made. At the same time as saying something about how the money was being taken care of. There are emails. Of course, she objected and said that there are forgeries. And they're not forgeries. They actually happen to be the emails that she tried to delete off the computer. I even have copies of the emails. They've already been checked. They're not altered. They're not fake. The same thing happened with one of her bit of evidence, W-17, I believe it was, an email supposedly I sent showing that it's a fake and it is a fraud on her part or her attorney's. And I called them on the fact in court. This is even extended, and I've been told I needed to include it, that it affected my health. With everything that was going on, my doctor in July of 2015 said I was normal, everything looked good. I was deathly ill at the time, but it didn't show.
You're out of time. We thank you. You'll have
the point I did. I'm sorry.
You'll have some time at the end for rebuttal.
Thank you.
Thank you. You may proceed.
Good morning. My name is Joseph Zellmer. In this case, there's nothing for the court to review. The appellant's amended brief does not comply with numerous sections of Texas Rules of Appellate Procedure, Rule 38. And this noncompliance comes after he filed his initial brief. The clerk gave him notice of the issues, gave him time to revise the brief, and then, except for a few cosmetic changes, the amended brief is the same as his initial brief. It appears that what the appellant is trying to do is to retry this case through his brief. He doesn't cite to the record his claims in regard to suppressed exhibits are not substantiated by the record. I count at least 29 exhibits that he mentions in his brief that were never offered in the first place. And there was no attempt by the appellant to get them into the record either through an offer of proof or a bill of exception. So he's just telling the court, hey, this is what these exhibits say. He says that he requested to put on additional testimony four times. I can't find that in the record. Now, there was, and he doesn't cite to the record, there was, after the trial, a motion to reopen the evidence, but that was never, as far as I know, that was never set, heard, or ruled on. It's not in the record.
Was that filed by Mr. Bache's then counsel, or was that a pro se motion?
That was by his counsel at the time. Again, he's made accusations that the trial court was biased, just as he did this morning. But just like with the time limit, when the judge told them what the time limit was going to be, there was no objection from the appellant's attorneys, who are two experienced board-certified family law attorneys. And in fact, his attorney requested the judge that we finish this thing today. And I find nowhere in the record at the end of the day that there was a request for additional evidence to be put on. At some place in his brief, he mentions that Appellee's exhibits were objectionable. I went through, there was only an objection to two exhibits on relevant. Everything else was admitted without objection. I'm not arguing hyper-technical noncompliance with the rules. This is a broad noncompliance. And, you know, as an appellate attorney, these briefs are extremely difficult to reply to because you just don't know if you can rely on the technical problems or if you have to go through and essentially do their work for them, search for things that he might have mentioned that this court might consider. I dug through there and he mentions a bunch of things, and I've listed them, I think, in number six of my reply, and none of those were preserved. If he has a complaint, if there's an error, none of them were preserved. But what's happening here is that he's trying to retry this case, trying to essentially present evidence to the Court of Appeals, and the record just doesn't substantiate what he's saying. So that's all I have. The justices have any questions?
Thank you.
Thank you.
You have a 5-minute rebuttal.
I'm not going to argue what Mr. Zellner just said. I'm not an attorney, like I said. The first time that I filed the brief, it was returned. I made corrections, quite a few corrections. Whether it was to the way it should have been, according to him, obviously not. It did meet the requirements of quite a few other briefs that I saw when I was doing research. I'm not trying to redo the trial. What I am trying to do is point out the fact that I've been taken advantage of, that agreements between my wife and I that were covered by both case law and law, the judge ignored. I was expecting to have a considerable amount of money in my retirement account. I gave up quite a bit to make sure that money would be coming in. My inheritance money, the last of my inheritance, had come in, and she stole $46,000 of that. She didn't object to it. She, in court, never said a word about that. She tried to say that I spent all the money, and part of the evidence that the judge would not allow with the bank statements that showed that Lisa Allen had just bluntly misunderstood, misrepresented, or outright lied about this. My contention all the way through this, when I went in for the divorce, I expected the retirement money that should have been there to be paid to me. The fact that she squandered it is not my problem from that standpoint. The money that she was supposed to pay back to my mutual fund was never done, yet she said she was doing it. The money that she stole, as I said, the last of my inheritance. When I talked with her about this briefly in March and pointed out that she was financially raping me, she didn't seem to think there was anything wrong with it. What I'm trying to do through the appeals process is to have pretty much the hearing that Judge Harling had put aside. I want the money that should have been there. By case law, it should have been given to me. That was my future. As I started to say before I ran out of time, it's even to the point where it's affected my health. I was healthy before this started, or at least thought I was. I now have atrial fibrillation, extremely bad. In July of last year, I found out after going into extreme problems at the hospital, I lost a kidney due to cancer. It turns out the form of cancer, the hospital is quite sure was brought about by the fact that Lisa Allen is HSV2, genital herpes. They believe that that's what caused it. The AFib, they directly put down is what happened. due to all the stress, the strain, and finding out that the money that I thought I'd have for retirement. I trusted Lisa Allen. As my wife, I thought she was doing what was right. There are emails that were suppressed by the judge. As part of what I put in for the brief, I included all the evidence that was submitted. And in spite of what was said, the judge did suppress quite a bit of it. She would not allow it. We put in for 45 different items, and very few of them were allowed. Some of them were self-explanatory, and the judge didn't bother with them. And as I said, we were not allowed enough time. And it wasn't unanimous that they wanted to take care of everything. They wanted to get all testimony in. That is why my attorney requested additional time for testimony, made a motion, which the judge ignored. And what my motion was to take a look, and it was very blatant. In fact, it had quite a few different things and what evidence, you know, would support it. As I said, I'm an engineer. We're used to having all sorts of documentation to support it. You know, anything that we do, it's a matter of normal course in our business.
Thank you, sir. Your time is up. Gentlemen, we appreciate your argument. Your case has now been submitted to the court, and you are now free to leave if you wish. We have another argument that will be made following yours. If you want to stay and listen, you're welcome to do that as well. But otherwise, you can be on your way. Again, we thank you for your time.